Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening, Mr. Jesse. How are you tonight?
How are you, sir? I can't complain.
Pretty good.
How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Been a busy day. Got a lot done.
Yes, sir.
Been a busy day. I know you had a busy day.
Oh, busy 3 days. I mean, it just won't stop.
Well, you wouldn't have it any other way, though. You know what?
No,
well, show me the
break.
Show me the rule that says it has to.
I know, right? I'm like, really?
Yeah.
This week is just my wife left her yesterday. I left at 7:45 in the morning, and it was 8:30 at night before I called her and said, "I'm on my way home. You want to meet me at Outback so we can grab dinner?" And she's like, "Really? Where you been all day?"
<I'm> like, really?
My head was stuffed in books with Marshall on your darn case. That's where I've been all damn day.
Ooh, God, look.
Oh, you're asking. You are asking for it.
Man.
I know, right?
Oh, this is a man with a death wish.
Yeah, where do we send the flowers, Jesse?
Flowers are donations. What's
your
favorite charity?
But I got it done, dang it. We got it done, so it's good stuff. I'm very, very happy. And all at the same time, we found some new stuff that's going to help all of us and our members. So, you know, I said, I'm putting it all together. You guys will get copies of everything, and then I'll go ahead and put it up on the site when it's all done. But you guys are going to have a really good appellate brief example to go off of, and the strategies and everything that are actually involved in deciding how you're going to proceed with the appeal, because you got to always think about what do you want the court to do. It's not a matter of just putting together a brief and showing the court what the other court erred in. There's a strategy involved. What do you want that court to rule? So that's how you got to present it. And of course, you know, Marshall's been an attorney for 30 some odd years and done plenty of appellate work, so he doesn't know the FCRA and FDCPA as well as we do, but he knows the motion practice.
And the procedures. The procedures
That's
and
right.
the rules.
So with all that being said, of course, I have total faith that we're going to get this done and knocked out, but we really, with the strategy, it looks like it's going to go the way we want it to. We've come to a strategy, so pretty pleased with that. Pretty pleased, buddy.
Good. Glad to hear it.
Yep.
I know you were cranking when we talked. And
yeah. I've been going. I'm just tired.
Mm-hmm.
Tired, you know. So.
Well, for everybody
anyway.
That's called in, if anybody has any good news, hit the one key. This is good news only, please. Hit
the
one key
recording?
On your... things. The recording starts automatically on Blog Talk.
Okay. Well,
but
Jesse
has not done the disclaimer yet. So.
Right.
No, I have not. So I'll knock that out 2 seconds. Guys, welcome everybody. Again, before we even get started, thanks to our moderators for all your help. Obviously, we all need you guys and can't do it without you. So get that out of the way right now. Guys, of course, everything we discussed tonight is in fun. And seriousness all at the same time. It's a lot of legal information, a lot of legal strategies that we use and we've used. I don't know who's making that racket back there. But at the end of the day, guys, none of it's legal advice, and it shouldn't be taken that way because we're not attorneys. And if you want an attorney, feel free to call one. Go look in the Yellow Pages. Does that even exist anymore, Dave? I don't know. Go look on the Internet, find an attorney, and ask him for some legal advice, because if this is where you're seeking it, you've come to the wrong location. So, again, guys, we're going to have a lot of fun discussing a lot of different subject matter, but none of it should be taken as legal advice. So, with that said, good enough. I have a copy in my hand of a check that was issued on the 12th, Dave, for $45,000 to my buddy Dave. So I'll be sending this out in the emails.
Is the other Dave. Yeah. This is
the other Dave, my buddy. Yeah, this was
awesome.
For TCPA violations.
Oh,
he is absolutely ecstatic.
I bet.
Yeah. So that's my good news. It's actually for my friend, but hell, I'm happy as hell for him. So,
Oh,
all
well,
good stuff, man.
My news is same old, you know, still the grind. But I spent this whole day creating a detailed evidence spreadsheet list, okay, because it I just
sounds
have
like
to
fun.
Do that. Yeah. And as everybody knows, in this particular case, there is just mountains and mountains of paperwork having gone back and forth in discovery and production that constitutes evidence. And, you know, this has to be at least the 200th time that I have read every one of these documents carefully, line by line, and here we go again. Today, I picked up at least three things that I missed before. After all those times.
Yes, I can absolutely 100% agree with you on that, because I know how that is.
Yeah,
and
I mean, Dave knows
yeah.
how many times and how carefully yep. I have been through these records.
Uh-huh.
But that just goes to show you, everybody out there, you can't read them enough times, and you never can be confident that you have not missed something in your favor, some detail that you didn't pick up before.
There you go.
Yep.
So
it's,
even up to the last minute,
when
you got to use it.
Yeah, it's not just a matter of reading something. It's a matter of thinking about what you are reading. You really, and we haven't really been trained to do that. We've been trained, well, just read that. Okay, you read something. Well, what all did it say? Well, you know, it talked about such as, no, what did it say? Well, I don't exactly remember. Right, because you read it, but you didn't think about it. And that's
well,
the difference.
It's like Dave is always saying, read every word and think about every word. Well, usually when he says that, he says it in reference to motions, court orders, complaints, the written text, okay? But when you're looking at Bates records that you have gotten from the other side, you're looking at someone else's internal company records full of dates and codes that it's going to take you some time to figure out, you know, what those codes mean, what they're referring to. It's something completely, utterly, and totally foreign to you. So naturally, you're going to have to go over that multiple times just to get a handle on what it is you're looking at and what exactly it means. But again, each entry, whether it's a code comprised of letters and numbers, or it's a phone number, or it's a comment, a date, anything. Each little entry, you have to look at and stop and think about it. If it takes you 6 months to do it, you still have to do that. And then do it again and again and again and again, and you're still going to find stuff that your eyes and your mind didn't pick up.
You found
that's
some
right.
more. Well, that's good. That's good. That's
yep.
very good. So another step in the right direction for Terry.
Yeah.
Getting things done.
I have to share something with you. Last night, and I can't remember who it was, one of the members was talking on the call last night, and he was talking about the website, The Robing Room. Okay,
yes.
And I
that
had
was
been
John.
There some. Okay, John, I had been there sometime in the past. God, it must have been a year or so ago. Anyway, I went in there again just to check on, you know, the big judge here, and whom I have to deal with now, because the magistrate handles everything up to now. Now it will be him. Well, this doesn't make me feel any better about having to deal with him again, because I know he doesn't like me. But I have to share with you, there is a section in the Robing Room. People are rated, or these judges are rated, based on input from other people. You know, other people rate them and put comments in. There's only one comment in there, and it's short. but I got to share this. The comment on this judge is, rulings are substantively wrong, poorly written, and barely researched. He is as thick as grits on a cold winter morn, and slow. If this judge was ever a good attorney, those skills were lost years ago. Aside from this general lack of legal ability, he is a very pleasant fellow.
Jesus. Oh, boy.
I love the thick as grits on a cold winter morn just cracked me up.
Yeah, really. Jeez. Well, I've got a little good news I'll throw out real quick. Chase keeps calling me. They've called me 20 times. And they keep hanging up on me when I tell them not to call. The other thing is I did get my fifth lawsuit paperwork from the small claims court yesterday, and I'm still waiting for an answer on the attorney whether he's going to accept service or whether I have to serve through the registered agent again, and that'll be up to them. I'm giving them the opportunity to save $70 a whack on doing that. So we'll see what happens there. But the phone keeps ringing, and we're moving forward on the other things. Oh, and I've got a settlement check coming that should be here by the end of the week or first part next week. So
awesome.
Another one. So
hey, I got a little bit. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I got a little bit. All right, Joe. Well, Dave, you know, as I mentioned last night's call, along about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I journeyed on down to the post office to file my notice of intent to sue on 10 phone calls. And while I was gone, the 11th came in. And this morning, the 12th came in. And this afternoon, the 13th came in.
Oh, good.
So it just keeps getting better.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Cry all the way to the bank, right?
Indeed.
Yep. I love it. Good deal. Larry, John, either one of you guys got any good news before we go out to the members? Evidently not.
I don't.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go to the members. We are doing good news only, everybody.
I think Larry said he did. I think Larry said he did.
No, he said I believe he said he didn't have any.
Oh, sorry.
I'm going to get you a new battery for that hearing aid, Jeff. I'll tell you. Okay.
Get two batteries. I got two ears.
Oh, okay. There you go. Let's go to 407 for good news. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey there. How are you guys tonight?
Pretty good.
Good.
How are you?
This is Velva in Apopka, Florida.
You know, Velva, I've been waiting. You're like a mistress in the dark. Where have you been?
Let me explain. I was on last Tuesday night's call. My hand was up near the end of good news when there was a lot of excess noise and confusion and people raising their hand too soon, and I didn't get called on for my good news, but I was on the call. So I shared my good news.
Okay.
So you'll forgive me. I did share my good news the next night on Terry's call, but I'll repeat it for those who were not there. The planets were aligned, I think, that night, that day, and all good energy was flowing my way. But I had a trial for my foreclosure on my rental property. We are in Florida, so I think most everybody understands now that Florida Supreme Court doesn't care if there's evidence or if it's right or wrong or anything. They're just going to try to set the date and clear the docket. However, to make the long story short, our beloved attorney who talks mean talk, you cannot cut him off when he's saying his piece. Everybody was allowed 5 minutes. My attorney took 40 minutes. The other side could not prove up their case, and the judge dismissed it.
Awesome.
That was a miracle.
Yep.
Bam.
It was an absolute miracle. I want to thank Jesse for all his input, his experience with all these crazy people in the courts. The moderators are fantastic and knowledgeable, and they battle on and they continue to teach us and guide us. And I want to thank
everyone.
God bless
you, Velva. That's absolutely awesome. But I want you to just emphasize a point that you are a member. and you've come to our call for quite some time, and you've asked a bunch of questions, which you've taken back to Marshall. Not to say I work with Marshall, so he's always looking for my input. It was 30 seconds after he hung up with you that he called me. I won. We won. We won. We got a dismissal.
Yes,
you know.
I did. That you were in our conversation. I said, I know who you're going to call next.
That's
and you
right.
better call me.
So, yeah. So my point being is, yeah, that you came here to ask questions to go present them to Marshall and say, Marshall, what about this and what about that? And what,
right. It,
my point is the interaction, guys.
It is a battle.
That's right.
It can be a battle
that's
sometimes
right.
because he disagrees, and I just get frustrated because I said, no, that's not what I've been taught on the calls.
Yeah. I know. It sounds crazy,
it's
right?
It's a battle.
But, you know,
but,
it works.
You know, but, you know, everything just fell into place. It's not that they can't come after me again, and I'm sure they will try. But for right now, we're going to take it as a win. And
it is a win.
It's an absolute miracle. I just can't tell
yeah.
you. I can't tell you it's a miracle.
Yep.
It really is
good
true.
Good job.
True. But
great
thank you,
job.
All of you. You're all so wonderful. Thank you.
Bella,
and I'll
you have an awesome
now.
Night. That's right. And
oh,
get
Dave.
On it, girl.
Dave, unmute John, please.
Yes, I'm trying to find him.
He must have come back in. He was in once, and he must
there
have
he
dropped
is.
Off. He's had problems. There we go.
Okay, now
Mr. John.
All right.
There you go, John.
Now, had you,
I couldn't find you. You didn't type in John, so I lost
and
you in the queue somewhere in there.
And I didn't see he was Skyping me.
Oh, well. I'm back.
Oh, I seen it. I just didn't find him.
No. There you go. Okay. Well, thank you, Velva. That's fantastic. We love it. And, you know, we help dispense knowledge, but you guys are the ones that put it into action.
Thank you so much, Dave. You've been a great help on your calls and on Terry's call and your support and belief, and I really appreciate it.
That's well, awesome.
You did a great job. I love it. Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Let's go to 651. There we go. We're unmuted. 651, you got some good news for us? 651 for good news. If you're not going to talk to us, we're going to go on to the next. Evidently not, so we are going to go to 559 for good news. This is good news time here, everybody. 559.
Hi, Dave. Hi, everybody.
Good evening.
Hello.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Not too bad. I just received a check for $2,500 for two calls, and I got an offer of settlement that will be ready for, well, that's what they said. They'll be sending me a complete offer of settlement tomorrow in the morning. I should receive something in an email. But, yeah, I just wanted to put that out there. It's my good news.
Wonderful.
That's awesome, man.
Well, that's fantastic. It's always good to get a check, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, this next one... Geez, I'll be like two in 2 weeks, but it's for six calls, and yeah, I'm in a good position because I have, you know, all my evidence, and they're way far away, and I know they don't want to do battle with me because, you know, they're already buckling and stuff, but yep, that's it.
Well, good job. Great job.
Thanks.
It's always nice to get a check. Love it. All right, let's go to 404. 404, you got some good news for us.
Sure do. Evening, everybody. This is Thomas over here in Georgia. And
hi, Thomas.
My good news is that I came to a settlement agreement with one of the defendants in my case and was able to voluntarily dismiss them with prejudice. It's a confidential agreement. I'm very happy with it. It takes a lot of pressure off of me in dealing with the remaining defendants. And put together a notice of to the court of playing games and test and a notice of testing my mettle, and filed that with the court today. And so the suggestions are working. You guys got some real gems out there. And the third thing I'll say is the attorney for one of my defendants, who I sent a debt validation to after he offered a loan mod or a discounted write-down, replied that it was not, that my letter was not a debt validation letter, but he included an allonge that nobody else has been able to turn up in the past 7 months. So I'm kind of taking that as good news because it doesn't have any staple holes or dates on it and looks to be typewritten very recently. So that's my good
news. That's good. Wow. Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Very good. All right. Well, that's good. Those settlements are nice. When you can get some moolah and get somebody off the books so you're not having to deal with them, that's a real good thing.
That's
all
awesome,
right.
Man.
Let's go to 321. 321, you've been, come on. There we go. 321, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Hey, it's a Brian.
That's me.
Yes, how you doing, Brian?
Good. How are you, Jesse?
Good, buddy. You been all right?
Yeah, I've been doing pretty good. I was telling on Dave's call last night, I got a summons served at the last minute, which was nice. But I got even better, I got an email from the attorney just about an hour ago saying he'd like to discuss a settlement to get that off the books.
Nice, dude.
How's that for a quick turnaround?
Yeah, I just got the summons today in the mail from the sheriff, and I was just about to go send it down to the courthouse tomorrow, but I'll touch base with him first and see what we can do to wrap this up. Just a couple credit pulls, but
I'll take it.
That's awesome, man.
Great.
Well, heck yes.
Okay, that's it for me. You guys have a good night, and I'll be listening to the rest of the call.
Yeah, brother. Absolutely.
All right.
Awesome, man.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Alrighty.
Hey, that's super. All right, let's go to 907 for good news. This is good news only.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we got you. Go ahead.
Hey, this is Justin in Alaska. I'm a new member.
Wow.
Long-time listener, though. But I got good news because I started a new suit. Against PayPal, and bill me later for a simple credit pool. Yeah,
that's awesome.
And they got served today, and so gonna be in the call here pretty soon and get that 26F conference going.
awesome, man.
Maybe try to get a settlement early, but we'll see what happens. I'm actually ready to go to litigation, but and then I got another TCPA suit I'm getting ready for. I've been studying in the webinars against diversified consultants. They called me 5 times, twice in one day. And so I'm going to get them. I got a FDCPA and TCPA and also Alaska statute on that one. So that ought to be a nice one.
Yeah, good. You know about them having their COO on ABC News a couple weeks ago, right?
I did see that.
Yep. Okay, he admitted right on there that they make 1.3 million calls a day, so there's no doubt that they're using ATDS.
That's outstanding. Yeah, that's such.
Yeah, it's always nice when they make a public disclosure of that kind of stuff on national television.
I'm looking at a very interesting statistic at the moment. This is Collections and Credit Risk Web Seminar. It came in email. You know, you can sign up for the seminar. Debt collection makes up 10% of all complaints, with 204,644 filed with the FTC in 2013.
Yeah, it's just a minor little deal.
Just on debt collection, just with the FTC in 1 year, 204,644 complaints filed. How many consumers out there, how many people out there don't even know the FTC exists?
Yeah, or the consumer protection statutes, either one.
Right. Those
yep.
are just the people who did complain.
Yep. All right, well, that's the end of the people in the queue for good news. So what we're going to do is open up everything to Q&A now. If anybody's got questions, You can go ahead and hit the one key on your phone. We got a bunch of them that have done that real quick. I do want to remind everybody so that we can serve as many people as we possibly can here. Please be concise with your questions. We can't take a five-minute story leading up to a three-minute question. And please be concise. We'll try and be as concise also in the answer so that we can get to as many people. If I reach out and choke Jesse, I've got really long arms. I can reach him all the way over in Florida. So rest assured we'll try and keep it tame on
both sides.
You're
angry this evening.
Yeah, you know, I told you he was an ape.
Just the long arm of Dave.
Yeah. This is a long arm statute. All right, let's go to 770 for your question. Good evening.
Is that me already?
There you go.
Hi there.
You're on. Don't you feel the spotlight on you, the heat?
Yeah, especially after getting my 12B6 today. And, Terry, you're going to love this. They put in their pleading, do you know that you can, they're talking about long-arm statute, I have no personal jurisdiction, they want to change venue, all this, but did you know that to have an act, God, I've just highlighted it, hold on, Georgia courts have ruled that when a defendant uses the telephone or email to contact a Georgia resident, defendant's conduct occurs at the place where defendant speaks into the telephone or types and sends his email. Did you know that? Did you know that? If they are not in Georgia harassing you, they have no responsibility whatsoever.
Well, it's Georgia. Does that surprise you?
No.
Okay, then.
Okay, wait a minute. Yeah, wait a minute. Repeat that for me. So that sounds like that the offense occurs where you are at.
For purposes of personal jurisdiction under Georgia's long-arm statute, Georgia courts have ruled that when a defendant uses the telephone or email to contact a Georgia resident, that's me, defendant's conduct occurs at the place where defendant speaks into the telephone or types and sends his email. No personal jurisdiction existed over a defendant who made harassing telephone calls to a Georgia resident from another state. Finding that defendant did not engage in any contact in Georgia when he sent the emails, from out of state. Thus, the few isolated mailings alleged in this case cannot establish personal jurisdiction under subsection 2. That's just one of the many things in this response.
Sounds like you should sue in federal court instead of state court, like we always
recommend.
Yeah. I am in federal court. This is Georgia. This is my federal FDCPA case.
Well,
I just got a 12B6 back.
Well, the lawyer...
That doesn't apply. That doesn't apply, right, Larry?
No,
federal rule trumps state law. By definition.
Exactly.
Oh, they're using
federal law.
That's not federal law. The FDCPA applies to anybody anywhere. You can't say, well, because I received the call in Georgia. Georgia can't trump that out.
That's what they're trying to do. And they're using
they can try all they want, but that ain't going to work.
Rule 4E of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure directs courts to look to the state long-arm statute in order to determine the existence of personal jurisdiction.
Jurisdiction is under the federal statute, not the long arm. Georgia's arms are not that long.
No kidding.
This is federal. All they're using is the Georgia rules of civil procedure.
Yeah, they're trying to snow
the long arm statute doesn't apply when you're dealing with federal statutes, ever.
When they're quoting 11th Circuit cases. I haven't looked them up yet. I haven't had time.
Yeah, you better go read those cases because...
Here's my guess, Terry. They're quoting 11th Circuit cases that are referring back to state issues.
Uh-huh.
Different than if the federal court looks at the FDCPA cases in Florida. It's FDCPA they're going to work off of, not the federal. So they might say, well, this doesn't work because it's FDCPA, yada, yada, yada. But the federal will. I bet you they're not telling you that applies to their federal case, does it? These people, don't tell me they're that much of a moron. Please don't tell me that.
We're dealing with a pro se litigant, and it could be that they're trying to do a snow job figure and she's got no clue.
Exactly.
Apparently it's working.
Well, no, it's not working because here she is sharing that with us right now.
Yeah, but you believed it. That's what I mean. She actually believed it.
No.
You can't believe it.
No, I didn't believe it. I thought it was hysterical that they were actually putting that in there, that they, if they weren't in there because their phone was in Missouri and not in Georgia, they wouldn't be responsible for their actions. I thought it was hysterical. I'm sorry.
Well, I got to keep you guys on track. We need to get to a question here.
Well, okay, the question is, they are coming after me because this is not a debt collection activity because they're coming after me for NREM foreclosure. Well, remember why I amended they amended the complaint to take the NREM out? So they too haven't read this complaint either. Big mess, you know, because I have to go undo all of the wrongdoing, and I'm kind of like, where do I focus? That's what I need to know.
If you get a 12B6, you have to address the issues that they bring up, one for one.
Yeah.
Okay.
You just go through it. Whatever points they make in support of their motion to dismiss, you have to argue those.
What about the things they didn't address
you don't get to bring stuff in that they didn't address. You only address what they bring in. If they argue three things, you don't get to argue five. You argue three. You just have to pick it apart, identify specifically what their arguments are, make your arguments, and support it with a case law.
Okay, so just stick with what they put in here and don't go back to my case.
Absolutely. No, you don't get yourself off on a rabbit trail. You've got to stay on point with what you're dealing with.
Yeah, okay. Can I inject a thought in here just for a moment on that long-arm statute deal?
Yes.
They're pleading in such a way in an attempt to undermine and sabotage the intent of Congress to grant consumers the ability to seek redress for their injury.
For their abusive actions.
Right. And that's.
I was going to make a comment, but Dave said not to, so apparently, Dave, you're not the long-arm enforcer you think you are, because everybody's talking about it.
I'm giving Jeff his chance. You get too long-winded, and I know where the mute button is, buddy.
Yeah.
This is significant because they're attempting to sabotage the efforts and intentions of Congress.
Yeah, well, listen, Jeff, at the end of the day, it's no more significant than all the other nonsense they give us. What that is actually sanctionable because they're using and misreading case law to try to divert the court. So that's what you do is you move it under a rule sanction, and you write up a Sanction 11. You say, here, listen, I'm going to give you 21 days to withdraw that because you're misleading. That's what you do.
And with the purpose of leading the court to render an unjust decision.
Yeah, you could say that too, but you know, at the end of the day, it's just misreading cases. I just dealt with this. That's why I know. So that's really all it boils down to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you have to stay on point with what they argued in there. That's the overarching thing here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just don't delve into any other things. Don't bring up any stuff that isn't brought up. You deal straight on with the issues that they presented. Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome. All right. We got a rock and roll here. We're going to go to whoever it is that's got all the ones, and I don't know whether it's way up in Maine or what it is. One of you that's got your line blocked, all I've got is a bunch of ones. Try talking to us. Otherwise, we're going to have to move on because we can't identify people when they block these things or they use Skype.
I think that's it's Skype.
And it could be a Skype or it could be somebody else, but we don't have anybody speaking up, so we're going to have to move on to 609. 609, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, guys. This is Amir from New Jersey.
Yeah. Good evening.
Yeah, how you doing? Good evening. I have a question regarding robocall. All right. I received last month of July about 14 calls from nieces, which I do have an account with them. I have, they have my cell phone. Those 14 calls are on my cell phone. They have my cell phone as my contact information. But when I attempted to answer any of the phone calls, there was no answer. There was either a machine that mumbled or there was a hang-up. So after a while, I Googled the number, researched it, and I found a lot of complaints, a lot of people talking about it, the same thing happening, hanging up. At the very bottom of the search, I found out somebody said, it's Mises. So I called up the number, and it was Mises, you know. So my question is, if I have an account, whatever, they have my contact information as my cell phone, okay, so they have my consent to call me. Is it a robocall that they're using an automated machine to call me and hang up?
Jesse, you want to clarify that for him?
Yeah, the use of the automated machine is what the violation is, period. The problem you have is, if you gave them that number, you gave them consent to use it and call you. So you can't complain about it.
So it's not
that's a mistake people give. No, it is a robocall, but you gave them permission to call that number.
Unless you formally rescinded that permission, you did give it.
Right.
To.
So by putting it down as a contact number, you said, here, call me.
Okay. All right, so it's not a robocall. So what I have to do is call Mrs. and I would tell them that I don't want any robocalling from that day on.
No, you don't want any calls.
I would suggest, what you need to do is put it in writing. I would not do it verbally.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Send a notice to them effective upon your receipt of this letter. You do not have my consent to call number 1234567. I wouldn't say in the letter my cell phone number 1234567. I would simply say the number. And make sure you send it certified mail, have a copy of it, that way you have got the proof, and that prohibition starts upon their receipt. And if they, you know, if they get it on the 19th and they call you on the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, and then they stop, the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd are violations. There's no grace period for them to get it out of their system or anything else. Okay?
All right.
But like the other guy said, you gave him permission, so you have to revoke that.
So I got to revoke that. Well, my cell phone is my only contact number. I don't have a landline right now. So what do I got to do, get a landline? So they need a contact number, or they don't have to have a contact number?
No, they don't have a contact number.
Even with an open account with them, that's still valid.
Well, you have to read whatever their rules are. You know, they make their own rules, and you either agree or disagree. Simple as that. You don't like it, they say you have to close your account. End of story. Done.
All right. Thanks. Thanks a lot, guys.
Does that make sense?
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, it does make sense. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately, they make the rules, right, Dave? It's their money.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, they do. Okay, let's go to 909. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Good evening. This is Larry from San Bernardino.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, San Bernardino. I've been there.
Yeah.
Haven't been there
for a while. My mother-in-law
lives
there.
Okay, I filed an FDCPA Rosenthal case. This was on an unlawful foreclosure on a house that happened nearly a year ago. Filed it in. I got a motion to dismiss, of course, along with a hearing date of September the 8th. Now, I thought I had 21 days to respond, but it turns out I only had 10 when I found out. I hurried around and got it filed within the 10 days. My question is, when I go to this hearing, what might I expect to happen there?
Is this a hearing on that motion?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it's a hearing that came back with their motion to dismiss.
No, it's a hearing for what? A hearing to hear that motion?
That's what I'm guessing, because it came back, you know, on the motion.
You got to read it. You got to read it. It's going to tell you what it's for.
Sometimes they don't, Dave. They just say this motion will be called for hearing or whatever, but they didn't tell you exactly.
Well, that's right there. This motion will be called for hearing.
Yeah, but
that's
what motion? What if I got five motions pending? That's not a good guess.
Well, no, if he's got one there, that's making it obvious. But
yeah, there's only one.
Yeah, you have to assume that it's a hearing on that motion to dismiss.
Right.
So
yeah.
You are going to have to be prepared to go and argue it in court. You've already responded to it and made your arguments, right?
Right.
Okay, well then be
You're
able
ready
to
go.
go in and articulate and back up what you put in writing. Make sure that you've got notes and case law and so on and so forth, and that you can very clearly explain that to the court.
Okay. All right. Then, when he denies the motion to dismiss, then they have to file an answer, right?
More than likely, if the motion is denied, the court would probably deny it and order them to answer within so many days.
Yeah, right. Generally within 20 days, yeah.
Yeah, so I wouldn't have
to
do anything
else. So this
motion
to dismiss is on you. It's your motion to dismiss their complaint.
No.
My complaint.
Their motion to dismiss his complaint.
Right.
And it's a federal court, or it's...
Yeah. Yes.
And there's a hearing on a motion to dismiss for a 12B2?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
That's pretty unusual.
Yeah, well, it's California, though. Remember, it's still one of those
I was just going to say
state,
the same
so.
Thing. Yeah, yeah. But the bottom line is, if you've got a hearing on it, the court evidently wants you to come in and find out whether you're just one of those people that picks stuff off the Internet, fills out a piece of paper, and has no idea
just like
what you've
attorneys
done.
Do.
Okay. All right.
Like most of the attorneys do, right, Dave?
Mm-hmm. So this is why you need to have yourself prepared and know you're going to want to know what you put in as a response to argue that. You're going to want to know that by heart. So
right.
That
okay.
When the judge questions something, well, you know, here, Mr. Jones, you said in paragraph 7, what do you mean by that? You need to be able to explain that.
Okay.
Because if you can't explain it, then he's going to be going, oh, it's another one of these guys that just had somebody fill out some papers for him, and he doesn't have a clue what he's doing. You don't want that to happen.
Right.
So.
Okay. Let's just be ready. All right.
That's it.
After they answer, then it comes to 26F, right?
Right.
Okay.
No, 26F can come... even before your hearing. So,
really?
Of course.
Well, when is your hearing?
September the 8th.
Well, that's fairly quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and what he said is after they answer, I said, no, it doesn't matter. You can have your 26F agreed and done in 10 minutes tomorrow. So, but, you know. There's nothing in the rules that say they have to wait or anything. That's all I'm trying to point out.
And normally, when you got a situation like that, you don't step into that because the other side's going to say, we're going to get this dismissed. We're not even going to talk to you about a 26F.
Right.
Yeah,
there's nothing in the rules that gives them the power to tell you, forget it, we're not going to.
Exactly.
So would it be kind of a good idea tactically to go ahead and set up the 26F? No?
I would.
Cool.
I'd try to tell them, let's get it done. And when you go to the court, they say no. Then you tell them, hey, Your Honor, you're not trying to deal with these guys. And they're so arrogant, they think this is going to be dismissed that they didn't even want to try to schedule it. You'd use it against them as soon as you step into the courtroom.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay, good. I'll do that.
I'm just a dumb pro se, Your Honor. You know the way that works.
I'm just trying to follow the rules, and they just don't want to. What am I supposed to do?
That's right.
Okay.
Is this
all
an
right.
FTCPA
that
case?
For you?
Yep. Thank you.
What was that, John?
Is this an FTCPA case?
Yes, FTCPA, Rosenthal, a couple other causes.
A couple other what? Like what?
Causes of action.
Yeah, I know, but which ones?
Oh, I got quasi-contract. Let's see. I don't have it in front of me.
What
declaratory
is quasi-contract?
Yeah, I was just thinking that,
yeah.
Too.
Let me get it here for a second. Okay, here it is. Declaratory relief, negligence, quasi-contract, violation
of...
Where'd
you get that stuff?
I've got two. I took your advice, went on to PACER, found two very well-written cases that almost mirror my situation, which both ended up in settlement. So I thought, okay, this is...
All right,
this,
now...
very well-written.
Yeah. Okay, now, I'm going to ask you a question. Exactly what is quasi-contract?
Yeah, that was my question.
Well, I'm going to have to go bone up on that, so I'll be ready to answer that question when the judge asks me.
Well,
so,
now, here's the thing.
Shouldn't.
What you've done is you've already put something into the court arguing that, and you have no idea what it was you were arguing.
Well, I understood it when I was reading it, but I keep it in my head, yeah. But I got to get it in my head so it stays there.
Yeah,
okay,
I've never dealt with that.
Violation of California Business and Professions Code and accounting. So those are the causes.
Oh, and if they're causes, they better have a private right of action for you to be able to push it forward. But all I was going to mention to you is if it was a FDCPA case or whatever it is, you need to know the elements of your cause of action, and you need to be able to list off the facts in your case that support your cause of action. And then
not legal conclusions now. Make sure you
not
clear
legal
up.
Conclusions. But you just have to point out the facts, and you have to know what things are fact issue that would have to go to a trier of fact, because you don't have to state everything perfectly like an attorney in your complaint on a motion to dismiss, but you have to have the basic elements of the cause of action pled in there with the facts stated in the facts section. Beyond that, they should give you the benefit of the doubt to go forward. And if you don't know what this other stuff that you've put in the complaint is, you might consider dropping those counts before the hearing to save yourself a lot of heartache with a judge that once he figures out you don't know some stuff, he just wipes you out on everything.
Okay, so you stick to the facts, right?
Yeah.
You stick to the facts
or
your
elements.
You know the facts, and you don't start a sentence by, they violated the FDCPA by, or they violated the Rosenthal by, because that's a legal determination.
Okay.
You can say something to the effect that they called me at 7:30 in the morning, contrary to the spirit of the FDCPA or the Rosenthal Act. You see, now it's a whole different animal.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, but saying, well, you know, they violated by this, this, and this, well, that ain't going to fly. That's a legal conclusion that you're making, you see. So that's the difference, guys.
Okay, stick to the facts. Don't make conclusions.
Don't make conclusions. Watch how you talk. That's all it is. It's so simple. It's like taking candy from a baby.
Okay, good advice.
But most people screw it up.
Yeah, I can imagine. Okay.
All right,
thank you very much.
That take care of you?
Yes, sir. Thanks.
All righty. Thank you, sir. Okay, let's go to 817, and I got a feeling this is Keisha.
It is.
Keisha! What's up, girl?
I'm surprised I was number six because I thought I was quick with the draw.
Well,
I gotta
your name is not Quick Draw
me.
McGraw, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
But just quickly, guys, I just have a question regarding, now, Jesse, I know I'm doing my respatilla stuff and I'm taking those, I'm dropping those counts out of my complaint. I read what you gave me. But
right.
I'm trying to figure out, I don't know if it'll, because with some stuff that I read with RESPA, it's actual 3 years for your statute of limitations, and then there was some for 1 year, depending on what the violation was. So when
I'm not
started,
even sure of that. So
I
really am not. Yeah.
It depends on what part of the RESPA that they violated with certain things. So it's a 1 year to 3 year statute. But what my question is this, because I started my whole thing last year on sending out my QWRs and everything, and I really hadn't gotten the responses that I needed. So I'm trying to see if I should restart the clock again by sending out another one to them.
Okay. No. Once you have sent out a QWR, and just remember what I've always said, if the QWR is solid, meaning you sent it out under the premise that you are disputing something.
Yes.
Meaning, okay, as long as that's correct and it's done under the format of a true qualified written request, then you got grounds to assume when they fail to answer. You don't need to keep asking them to do it.
Well, I'm just asking about the statute of limitation, though, because it would be a year this year. So if I'm going to drop those counts, then that means that I'm probably going to miss the statute of limitation.
You can do that on a separate lawsuit. Remember what I told you? You drop those counts, stick to your FDCPA, file another lawsuit separately. Do the court. Listen, have you asked the court to separate them?
No, because we talked about it would be best since they now combined them as than one, since they've already done that and they did the motion to dismiss. My best option would be for me to just drop those counts because the
court I would. Because RESPA doesn't pay anything anyway. It's $1,000 or whatever. It's nothing.
Right.
It's just, you know.
Okay, and the same thing would be with Attila also with, you know, obviously the gear violation. So I'm just wondering if I should send out another, because with Attila it's different because that actually can at any time because, they still haven't given me notice. You know,
right.
From lender to lender, you know what I'm saying? So that one I'm not too concerned about. It was the rest of the one with the year that I looked at with the statute of limitation, and I'm like, okay, if I drop those counts, then basically it'll be looking like I'm missing out on that
right,
statute.
Right.
So, okay.
Well,
that's
you can revive it by sending out another one, but you can see how much I know about TIL and RESPA because I believe they're absolutely useless. So, you know, I just don't, you know, I don't fight the battles I know that aren't going to make me a bunch of money. You know?
Right. I mean, in the FDCPA, once I do that one, then I have a better ground when I go after my wrong for foreclosure.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's what I just wanted to make sure. Okay, so I'm good. Thank you.
Everybody good?
All right. Thank you, Keisha. All right. Let's go to 708. And I just wonder if that's Rodney.
No, this is
708.
How you guys doing?
Hello, Michael.
Hey, how's
Pretty
it
good.
Going? Good. I had a question for you, and this one is pertaining to I called last week about a couple credit cards I had. One was Capital One, and I sent in the discovery for Capital One request, and they came back and sent me a bunch of my Capital One bills, and that's all they sent.
Capital One bills?
Yeah, a copy of the bills.
You mean
that
monthly statements?
Yes, monthly statements, yes.
What the hell
did that? You ask for?
I asked for, I don't have it in front of me, but whatever was on the credit card request form, the initial one, from the website. Just, you know, verifying that is my account and the other additional things that they requested.
Oh, okay.
And
this is on a – now, you said this was discovery. You mean a demand for validation, or are you talking discovery in a case?
Validation.
We're not hearing you. You're getting real faint.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
That's much better. Great.
Okay.
Thanks.
Brief of validation or a request for validation of the account.
Yeah, right, a request for validation. Okay, they send you some credit card statements. What does that validate? Nothing.
Right, exactly. That's what I was thinking, and I didn't know how to follow up with them.
What do you mean how to follow up with them?
I mean, do I now send the request and say, this is not what I requested initially? Can you please
tell me? Yeah, this is not validation, but here's the difference. That, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Larry and Dave and everybody else. if they're the original creditor, which I have to assume Capital One is,
yeah.
What are you trying to accomplish here, which is the better question. What is it exactly you're trying to accomplish?
Well, that is a very good question.
I just don't want you to use, you know, waste your time, energy, and effort there. That's all. That's why I'm asking.
Right.
You.
Okay.
What is the ultimate outcome that you would like to see?
I would like for this to disappear.
Ain't going to happen. Not by sending letters of, not like that, it's not.
Okay.
So, again, I ask you, you have to, you know, guys, and for all the new listeners, you have to always have some kind of direction and some kind of intent when you're doing things like this. Because
right.
if not, you're literally wasting your time and energy. And remember, guys, you cannot replace a single second of your lifetime. So make sure when you direct something that it has something behind it that's meaningful. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm telling you. So, dealing with the original creditor, there's several ways to get them in the corner, but to make it just go away, it's not going to happen. That's just like a, you know, pipe dream. That
right.
ain't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, basically,
where should I go on the site in order to let me know how to get them in the corner?
Well, here's the thing. You're mm-hmm. first of all, the original creditor is not subject to the FDCPA.
That's right.
Okay, that's your first thing. So
mm-hmm.
You're not going to get any FDCPA violations fiddling around with them. What you probably want to do is let them know you're not going to pay it.
Okay.
And then have them charge it off and send it to a debt collector. When
now,
you start dealing with a debt collector, then
mm-hmm.
you're in a position where they are subject to the FDCPA and not only can produce violations, more than likely will in just about every
exactly.
case.
Right, they
okay,
will.
So
that's right.
The attorneys who said that they are collecting a debt for Capital One.
Wait a minute. You didn't say this was a case. See, you didn't say this was a case.
No, and it hasn't been answered in the court, but they got an attorney involved in order to be a debt collector.
So then the attorney is a debt collector.
Right.
The attorney himself is a debt collector.
Yes, and on the statement they said that anything I need or to ask, I need to go to them in order to verify whatever.
Okay, then I think you should use Larry's approach, which is just call Capital One and say, do I owe you any money?
Okay.
Yeah, and keep in mind, and we've talked about this numerous times, there's all kinds of different entities of Capital One. You need to figure out
yes.
who you're dealing with, Capital One Bank, Capital One Services.
Okay.
Yeah, you got to look at those words that come after Capital One.
Right. That can be cleared up as soon as I get the statement.
Well, yes and no. Just get it. Go ahead, Larry. I'm sorry.
It's not that simple. The statements aren't going to tell you much, if anything.
Oh, okay. It doesn't tell you on
the letters
whether
might,
you're dealing with the
thing,
bank.
The attorney might say something. You know, you call up Capital One, you might start to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's an informal discovery process. You're trying to gather information without them realizing you're gathering information.
Right.
Yeah, kind of play dumb, you know, just inquire about things.
Right. Kind of say,
do
hey,
I
look,
owe you any
think,
money?
Right. And then they're just going to send me what they sent me before.
You don't know what they're going to send you until you do it. You got to be careful
true.
Making assumptions.
Right.
Don't get in the habit of doing that. That's a mistake.
Okay. All right. Then I'll just do that first thing in the morning. Give them a call and say, hey, do I owe you anything?
Yeah. Now,
that's right.
Just one quick question before or
mm-hmm.
about what you did before.
Right.
I'm assuming you were contacted by the attorney, correct?
This is correct. Not via phone, via mail.
Right. They sent you a Dunning
mm-hmm.
letter. Okay.
Yeah.
And you made a validation request to who? To Capital One or to them?
to them.
To the lawyers.
That's correct.
Okay, good. All right. So you're on track with that.
Okay.
And they were the ones that sent you the copies of what appeared to
the
be
Capital One
monthly statements?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. They came from the lawyer. They didn't come directly from Capital One.
No, they came from the attorney's office, right.
Okay, all right.
I got a sneaking suspicion this attorney's a debt collector and not dealing with Capital One. And I'm going to tell you why. I might be way off on this, but when I had did that with Capital One, everything I received was from Capital One, not from any third parties.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and how old is it?
I was just going to ask you, when was it charged off?
It was charged off maybe about 4 to 5 months ago.
Then it could be an assignee of Capital One.
Yeah, it could be.
They do that. Capital One does, but eventually
they
sell it.
Yep. Well, call Larry. Don't you think he still needs to call Capital One and just make the call and just make the simple inquiry of how much do I owe you any money?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
That's
and see what they tell you. They may tell you to call XYZ law firm, but you don't know until you call them and inquire.
And
like
if
I said,
they call me, that means
dumb.
They've already sold it
to
a debt collector. Yeah.
Okay, listen, don't talk over Dave, and Dave, don't talk over him. Go ahead and ask your question again.
Mm-hmm.
What was your question again?
My question was, if they say, you know, call this attorney's office, that does that mean that they sold the debt already?
No.
Well, either that or they hired the attorney.
Right, okay.
Well, yeah, don't make the assumption that they sold the debt.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
All it
what
means
state
is
do you live
it,
in?
What
state do you live in?
Are you in? You're in Illinois. He's
I'm in Illinois.
Number.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm in Illinois.
Doesn't Illinois have some pretty good laws, David, or no? Consumer debt
I don't
laws?
Know if they're really that good from what I what I know.
Okay.
Not,
I don't
not
know
anything
any,
outstanding.
That's why I'm asking
yeah,
about.
No, yeah, not nothing outstanding to my knowledge.
Okay.
So, anyway, you got a plan of action there, right?
Okay, sounds good, yes. I'm going to get on it tomorrow morning.
Okay, real good. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
You bet. All right. We're going to go down to, I believe, Florida to 305. You've been unmuted. Go ahead. 305. You've been unmuted. We're not hearing you, or you may be talking to a muted head. Handset.
Okay, wait, I'm here. Give me 1 second. My phone
hurry,
is muted.
Hurry up. Come on.
Hello. No, hang on. My phone was muted. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you, but it sounds like you're out in the garage. Can you talk
I'm
into
in
your
garage.
Phone?
Give me 1 second. Let me unplug it. Okay. Is that better?
That's much better. We can actually understand you now.
Cool. Okay, really quick question. So I have 6 defendants.
Well, you got away from your phone again now. You got to speak up into your phone so we can hear you, please.
Okay, better?
Yes, that's better.
Okay. I have 6 defendants in my FDCPA claim. I kept it simple, like Jesse said. Don't complicate it. The problem that I'm having is... trying to go outside from the noise on this road. Okay. The problem that I'm having is one of the defendants, it looks like he's hiding from us. First, he left the original law firm, and then he left the one that we found him, the one that's on Florida Bar. So now we don't know where to find him. Will they dismiss
the case? So call
the
Florida Bar.
Florida Bar?
Yeah. Isn't that your easiest solution?
I didn't think about that.
I'm sorry. I'm not being a smart aleck. I'm just trying to show you.
No. No, actually, the thought came to my head today. I was just like, you know, if I call, it's going to tell me the same thing that's online. But, yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to do it first thing in the morning. But would they dismiss the case because I have to submit all of my proof by tomorrow?
Submit proof of what?
Proof of service. Like the summons, I had to summon everybody.
You had to serve everybody, yeah.
Yeah, I had to serve everyone.
I deserve every one of the summons and the complaint. I got all five except this one particular guy, and I really want him because he was being a jerk in, when I was trying to stop the sale of the property. So, but would they dismiss it just because one is not served, or?
No, they'll just dismiss that defendant generally. But, Larry, isn't there, what could she file in there? I've never had that issue.
Now, why exactly are you worried? Is there a technical deadline involved, or has the court told you something?
No, the court ordered me. Like, I filed a complaint. I was one of the members. This is Bridget from the roundtable where I had the defendant. And it took me this long because the whole filing the lawsuit was giving me anxiety. I finally built up the nerves to do it after listening to the calls over and over and over and over again.
Good for you, Bridget.
So I finally got everything done. Like I'm, but this one defendant, he just keeps running. Like even the process server is
so
like think he's hiding.
Listen, you got to answer Larry's question
to.
Are you running out of time? Did the court tell you you have to do it? Are you pushing the limit there?
Yeah, the court says I have to show proof of service by tomorrow.
Okay.
When did they issue that order?
They issued the order back in May.
Okay, when did you file the lawsuit?
April 22nd.
What?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. No.
You've got 120 days from April 22nd.
Yeah.
I know. On her order, she said the order itself is like contradicting itself because at one part it says I have to serve all defendants by August the 20th, and I have to show proof on that date. I mean, if I have that date to service, don't I have until the end of the business day where I can submit the proof?
No, you just missed what Larry said. Didn't you just hear what Larry said?
Yeah,
didn't you go read the
100.
Rules on the service? You can tell the judge you're wrong. The rules of federal procedure provide me 120 days from the date of filing the complaint, which means June, July, August, end of September.
No.
Wait.
No,
she filed
it
in April.
April
22, and you got 31 days in July. You got 31 days in May.
In August.
Which means, yeah, but we're August, so you got to subtract 2 days off of 120 or off of 4 months. 4 months would be the 22nd, so the deadline is the 20th, which is tomorrow.
Okay,
right.
But let me explain
tomorrow
what's going on.
Tomorrow is 120 days.
Okay, that's not important, though. That is a technical deadline, which always can be extended for good cause, and it's shocking that the judge is paying attention to that before the deadline has even
That's right.
So all you did, you saw the rest of the defendants, right?
I filed all the defendants. One of them, is it okay that I filed one in Ohio? Because the only address that I could find for the bank itself is Ohio, the one that they have on the judgment. Because I can't find them in Florida Biz. Say that again.
Yeah, we already said yes. No worries.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, keep going.
Okay.
If that's for stress that they're doing.
You feel better. You don't understand.
Well, Bridget, your anxiety keeps you talking instead of listening. So
we need to
listen a little bit.
Yeah, Bridget, we need to. All right. There's five defendants, correct?
Six defendants total. Five was served.
You've served five properly. Have you filed the paperwork for those five?
I'm bringing them down there tomorrow in the morning.
Okay, perfect. File the five and ask for an extension on the six and explain exactly what's going on. The judge will give you another 30 or 60 days if you can demonstrate, especially, that the guy is deliberately trying to hide from your service. And the fact
and Larry, if she didn't, Bridget, did you say that the service process server has also said the guy's hiding?
He feels like he's hiding.
Well, then just get a little affidavit from him in the morning, right, Larry, and then attach that to it.
Actually, he's going to bring me an affidavit at school.
Oh, you're golden, right, Larry? I think she's golden at that point.
Yeah, you've shown good faith by serving out of six. You can show that this one guy is deliberately avoiding service. You just ask for an additional 60 days to try to get to him.
Okay, do I do that in a motion or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, a motion for enlargement of time to complete service.
Okay.
Or it could be a response to the, or, you know, to the order, just depending on how that is worded.
Well, Larry, now, go ahead, I'm sorry.
It could be just a response to that order. Either way, probably would work.
Order. Yeah, because she does have that clause in there, or show proof or show good reasons as why it should not be dismissed.
There you go. You're fine.
There you go. Yeah.
Just ask for another 60 days, and then do, you know, your best to, you know, the judge might give you 60 days, might give you 30, might give you 45.
Yeah. Okay, so do it in response to the order.
To be safe, you should do a motion, but... Yeah, it just depends on how that order is framed, really.
Okay.
Yeah,
and
I think if you keep it simple and just do a motion for enlargement of time to perfect service on defendant so-and-so, and then just explain in there that you have made diligent efforts to serve that defendant who appears to be evading service. See attached affidavit from so-and-so process server, and plaintiff requests an additional 60 days to complete service. I mean, literally, that can be just about it in a nutshell.
That's it. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, that's great. Is this call going to be available tonight? So I can listen to it again.
Yeah, these recordings are available.
What time frame are we at, Dave?
We're about an hour and 10 minutes into the call.
So there you go, Bridges, right? Go look at an hour and 5 minutes, and you'll
perfect.
Get...
Yeah, you guys are the bomb. You don't understand.
You know, Bridget, I had that situation and ran out of time like that, or was running out of time, and I asked the judge to give me an enlargement of time or in the alternative substitute service by U.S. mail certified return receipt, and they allowed me to serve them certified return receipt because I had an affidavit from the process server saying that they were being evasive.
Yeah, okay. The only thing is you got to know for sure where they are if you're going to do that. And if you don't know for sure where he is, there you go.
But I'm going to take Jesse's advice, and I'm going to call the bar tomorrow because, you know, he's still licensed.
Yeah, but if I'm not mistaken, aren't attorneys required as part of their bar card requirements, I should say membership requirements, to update the bar?
Yes.
Yeah, update the bar and any other, you know, movements, for lack of a better word.
It should be online. It should be available online.
Yeah, so check that out, Bridget, because that's it. Tell the bar, hey, listen, this guy's running around. I can't get service. What's the most current, up-to-date address you have on this guy?
Okay. All right, I'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you so much,
we got to rock and
guys.
Roll here.
All right.
Okay.
Later.
Thank you, dear.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye.
All right.
Okay, let's go to another one of those 1-1-1-1-1-1. We got ones coming out of our ears. Somebody that's out there.
I see that name.
that's the second one. We got one just two legs up. If you're calling and your phone number is blocked or something, try calling or talking to us because we're not getting anything. If we don't get anything within about 2 seconds, I'm going to mute it and we're moving on. And that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to go 770. 770, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please. 770, we're not hearing you. Maybe your handset is muted.
Okay, 770. Is that me?
Yep, it's you.
Okay, so this is Marva, and I have a couple of questions. I wanted to piggyback on a question that the person was asking about calls from an automated dialer. If it's someone that you have an account, but you've already asked them to not call the number anymore, and there's no reason for them to call the number,
and it is an automated dialer. If you've already withdrawn consent, it's a done deal.
Okay.
I don't know how you did it. Did you do it in writing? Did you send them a pigeon with a note on its leg? I mean, how'd you do it?
I did it verbally.
The Myers case actually says that that's enough. But, you know, everybody's up in arms over the Myers case. So
do you know exactly what date and approximate time you did that?
I have my phone records, like, if I call that number or if that number calls me, I have it on there.
Okay.
I have the history of the call.
Like Jesse said, there's a case that supports that, but there's controversy over that. And just for everybody's benefit out here, if you don't want somebody to call you and it's related to a potential TCPA situation, put it in writing and send it to them certified so you can prove that you not only sent it, but they got it. Then they have
no
leg to stand on. Yeah, you kicked all legs out from under the stool.
Okay, so then I will put it in writing and state that I previously had requested verbally.
On such
something.
And such a day.
Right. Yeah, on approximately such and such a day.
Yeah.
That way, Dave, she's not bound to, you know,
well,
she
if
can't
she's got
remember
the,
exactly.
the specifics on her phone, the evidence there, you know, but either way, yeah.
So, however, I continue to receive calls. I'm requesting in writing formally, whatever, that they discontinue calling, or I'm withdrawing consent. Which is it? Do I say, does it matter?
All I heard was mumble. Did you hear anything that made any sense?
Can you state that again?
So I'm going to reference that, I'm going to say effectively, immediately upon your receipt of this notice, you do not have consent to call, and I'll put my phone number. Prior request or prior notice was given.
I also made a prior request on approximately such and such date.
Okay.
And make sure you send it certified.
Yes, certified return receipt. The other question is, if I get calls from an automated dialer and it's from a number that I've never given them consent. I actually ended up calling the phone company because I wanted to trace who it was, and it was coming from a fax number at a nursing home, which I have no no reason.
That's a fun one.
So I called. They gave me the main number for them, and I did call, and the lady said that they have an automated dialer, that people were upstairs, and she could take my number and just tell them. I said, well, could you just have them call me? So I actually did get calls again after then, but then they seemed to have stopped like a couple of days later. But they called me several times, like a whole lot, more than 10, probably more than 20 times, because as soon as it would hang up, it was calling again. So
yeah,
that's what a fax machine will do. Right.
Yeah.
So my question is, does that constitute a complaint, a legitimate complaint, or, I've never given them consent to call
my
number. I don't even know them.
They were using an automatic dialer and they were calling your cell phone without your express written consent. What other ingredients do you need for a violation?
Okay. So, I apologize for asking. It's probably a stupid question to you guys, I know.
No.
Yeah, no stupid questions around here.
So what would I need to send them in that case?
Why would you need to send them anything other than a notice of intent to litigate?
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I wait after I send them the notice of intent to litigate?
Are you a member? I'm not cutting you short, but are you a member? Okay, then go read Take In Their Money section. You need to go read that, because just these few questions aren't going to resolve your whole issue. You need to get on there, you need to read, and have a clear and concise understanding, step one, step two, step three, step four, step five, and so on and so forth. Because if not, you're going to get part of it right, and you're going to miss a whole bunch. So you got to get in there, and you need to do it. The best way and the quickest way that I can think of for you would be to go to the TCPA takedown, and that's going to give you a step-by-step breakdown of what you need to do with them, okay? And then the taking their money section in there. Yeah, and in the website, there's a section called pre-litigation. That's the one you need to read up on. It's short. It's not that long, but I want you to familiarize yourself with all those steps because they are very, very important, all of them. There's not one that's less important than the others, what I'm trying to tell you.
Pre-litigation or pre-lawsuit?
Pre-lawsuit, sorry.
Okay. Okay, I have, yeah. Okay, all right, I have read that, so I will go back and I'll review it again.
Yeah,
the takedown
yeah.
you're referring to, is that a webinar?
That's in the archive
that's
webinars.
That's a webinar
yeah,
series.
It's a whole series. Should take you about a week to get through the whole thing.
Okay, I see it. Okay. All right.
Yep, and you've got
and then,
plenty of time. You don't have to worry about a statute of limitations
yeah.
issue. So you need to really make sure you're familiar with your process, the whole process and everything before you jump into it. Okay?
Yeah. Okay, I'll do that. And I have one last question. This is with regard to the foreclosure. I mentioned to you guys before that they canceled the notice of hearing on the foreclosure on the 6th. I got a letter from the attorney who is a substitute trustee who is also acting as a debt collector stating that they were canceling. I got the letter today stating that they were canceling on the 6th. However, in the meanwhile, I also received a statement of debt pursuant to, it gives the statute 4521.16, which I have read that. And basically, they are listing the indebtedness, and they are saying that Nation Star is the holder and the servicer, and that this isn't an attempt to collect the debt. It's unqualified. This document is unqualified perjury. They say that they are attempting to collect the debt, and at this point, the attorney. No attorney with this firm has personally reviewed the particular circumstances of your account. If you have previously received a discharge, well, okay, that's that.
So
please be advised.
What's the question? What's the question?
You're just reading the letter.
We got to get that.
Yeah. So the question is, do I just send, what do I do with this? I mean, do I just send a, I don't know what to do with this. How do I respond to this? They definitely are a debt collector. They obviously, there must be a complaint of some sort here, and I'm not sure how to respond.
What have we said a thousand times about what happens when, what you should do when you get a demand for payment?
Okay,
what's
so you
the
send
automatic?
The debt validation letter.
You thank
send
you.
The debt validation letter. Okay.
There you go.
So
there's your
that.
Answer.
Okay, so I sent the debt validation letter. Do I need to do anything else at this point?
Wait for them to screw up.
Yeah.
That's really all.
Yeah, yeah. Let just give them a chance to violate. They'll do it.
See, that okay. letter in itself, I believe, can be considered a violation. And the reason I'm saying that is it's not even comprehensible to a not sophisticated consumer, because I think I can consider myself above average, let alone the least sophisticated consumer, because it sounds like a bunch of mumbo-jumbo that somebody wrote in kindergarten.
Okay.
Yeah. They're
you
trying
agree
to scare
or no,
you. Well, you know, this is, yeah, they're trying to scare you. This is from a law firm, but then,
but
of
it's
course
not a
they,
debt, and we're not trying to collect anything.
Yeah.
But Nation is the holder of your note. And really, well, what the hell's going on here? I can't put two and two together with you guys.
Yeah. Well, give them a chance. If you sent your validation letter out in response to that, give them a chance.
They
to
will screw up.
Hang themselves.
Yeah, they give will do
the
it. Trust us.
I think it violated the conditions precedent, I think was what it's called. There are several violations on that already from the servicer. And just from what I was looking at on the website when I was going through that.
Okay. Well, we've got to get moving here. We got to keep going. Actually,
yeah,
we'll let
we're
you
really supposed
a little
to be
bit
limited to one
extra question. Yes. Yep.
So.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to go to 602. 602, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir. We sure can. Good evening.
All right. Hi, this is Jim in Arizona, and I was on a call last night with you, Dave, and Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
And Appreciate you taking my call. Got a little situation here, something a little different. I guess a little bit of a curveball I was not expecting. Filed a motion for default here against a debt collector who had been making repeated phone calls. And so we had five violations of TCPA and then had several counts of the FDCPA. Anyway, so I had filed a complaint and they did not respond, filed an application to clerk for entry of default, and also filed a motion for default judgment. So I used the sample on the website. However, I did add some additional information to what was on the website just to, I guess, kind of really kind of combine the...
You tried to enhance it.
I tried to kind of shortcut it a little bit by putting in the amounts I was seeking into the motion for default. So anyway,
that's good.
So the judgment issued a judge issued an order denying the motion for judgment, default judgment, and she used seven factors from a case of Idle versus McCool, which is I believe a 1984 or somewhere in the 80s case.
Right.
And
we talked about this last night on the call in detail.
Right, and so I reviewed those seven factors that she mentioned, and I'm just a little confused on this just a little bit because I really kind of felt like I had done everything I needed to do between the original complaint and the motion for default judgment that I needed to do. So one of the things that I started, I guess, you start rethinking, what did we do wrong? What did we omit or what did we add that we shouldn't have? And so one of the things I did not do was send a proof. I did not serve the other party of this motion for summary, or I'm sorry, motion for default judgment.
Right. You have to provide proof that you served them.
Right. Well, I received a different recommendation several weeks ago before I filed that and decided not to. Now I'm thinking that is the reason why she is stating that, because the seven factors, and I'll be very brief on this. I know there's a lot of people on the phone waiting with their questions, but the seven are, number one, the possibility of prejudice to the plaintiff. Number two, merits of the claim. Three, sufficiency of the claim. Four, the amount of money at stake. Five, the possibility of a dispute concerning material facts. Six, whether the default was due to excusable neglect. And seven, the policy favoring a decision on the merits. So I really felt like I covered really all these. The only thing that kind of jumped out at me, though, is that I did not provide a proof of service on the default judgment or the motion. And I'm wondering if that's really it, and if so, is it just simply re-entering the motion for default judgment and including a proof of service and, of course, serving the other party by mail? Or
were you on the call at the end of the call last night?
Around midnight. It wasn't the end of the call, but it was earlier on. And
No.
John,
no. Listen. If you were on the call at the end of the call, we went over this in detail. And there's actually a case that you can pull up that will give your answers. It's the Federal Trade Commission versus Handicapped and Disabled Workers. If you look that up from the District of Arizona, it breaks down each of the seven things you talked about. And basically, courts favor decisions on merits over default judgments. So they just don't hand out default judgments. They'd rather actually rule on a case. But if
John,
you look
I'm
at
sending that out, both those
tomorrow.
Cases, Idle and that one. I'm sending it out tonight with my call reminder. So
okay.
If he gets on my list, he'll get those cases.
Yeah, and it goes into detail on each of the 7 points and what it means. And, you know, they would rather not just hand out default judgments. They'd rather try cases on the merits. So it could be just that. But if you look over this, I think it'll answer your questions.
And okay. If you want to, go back to the recording of last night's call and maybe listen to the last hour or so.
Well, where can I get a recording?
To catch John's discussion. Talkshoe.com.
Where did I get last night's recording?
That, if you listen, I'll explain. Talkshoe.com.
Okay.
Do a search up in the search box, top right corner of the window when you go there, 54318, the PIN number for the call. All right. When you get to the call page, scroll down a little bit, and you'll see all the archived calls. You can either download it or you can listen to it right from there.
Okay. And then, Terry, you mentioned that you have the cases that John is referring to that I apparently missed at the end of last night's call.
Yeah. Are you on my email list?
Yeah. Queen Songbird?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. You'll get that tonight after the call. I'll be sending out the call reminder, so watch for an email that says call reminder and other info. They'll be attached.
Okay, now this judge seemed to, it's like she's telling me what exactly I need to do, which is fine. It was something totally unexpected on my end.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like she's just kind of, but she's telling me to, you know, resubmit it. So I'm kind of thinking, and this is new territory. You know, I've never done anything like this. So I kind of feel like I need to address each of those 7 in order in a motion, or how would you guys
read her decision carefully to exactly what she tells you she wants you to do.
Okay.
And go read the case. You got to go read the case. John's already answered your question. I have no idea why we're still talking to you. He answered your question. He really, really did. You're really overanalyzing this.
No,
go read the question.
Yeah. Okay.
You need to go read cases. That's how we learn, is to go read cases.
Okay. That gets you your information, give you,
well,
your method to where you go.
Yeah, I appreciate everything you guys do. If I did this full time, I'm sure I would really get this thing down really well. And I try to devote as much time as I can to it, but there's a lot
to keep up.
We
we understand where you're coming from. We've been there.
Yeah.
The big thing is you don't quit. You keep working at it.
Right. So now, before I go, though, I have a question that has been kind of
we got to limit. We've already had a lot of discussion on this. We got to limit things to one question. So.
Yeah. Get back in the queue.
Hi.
Yeah. Just jump back in the queue.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. We're going to go to 619. 619, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hey, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Here's the thing. I'm from Southern California, and I have my complaint written up for teaching. I know. I hear
you. Go ahead.
No, I hear you, but I haven't gotten to anything that bad yet.
Go ahead with your question.
I think that was an omen.
That was a ninja motorcycle going by.
Okay.
My bad. So anyway, my question is, I have a question about the statute of limitations. I had 7 phone calls that occurred September and October of 2012.
Yeah,
I know I have time left to file for TCPA, but for Rosenthal,
2 more years. Rosenthal's 1 year, if I'm not mistaken.
1 year from when the violations occurred.
Yeah.
So when they called in September 2012, I don't have a chance to just add that in.
Well, Google statute of limitations Rosenthal Act.
That's right on the website. You don't need to go that far.
Yeah.
So. Right on our site.
Yeah.
You guys just underutilized the site.
Yes.
The legal section and the legal library and pleading section has more information than you can read in a lifetime. And all the statute of limitations for each state for everything is there. Contracts, any kind of consumer protection laws. It's all there. All you got to do is go look at it. 5 seconds.
Okay. Yeah.
So but yeah, if I'm not mistaken, Rosenthal is 12. It's 12 months, a year at Rosenthal.
Yeah.
Just like the FDCPA.
Okay, I'm was just confirming, positive, but you know, I'll double check. You know, to make sure.
Yeah, I suggest you do, but I really do believe it is that 1 year. So either way, you're in good shape. You know, you still got plenty
okay.
of time on TCPA.
Okay, great.
All right,
all right.
Take
all
care
have.
Of you. All right,
yep.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
All right, we're going to go to 240. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, we got you loud and clear. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. My name is Bill Ingram. This is my first time calling. I'm not a member yet. I'm going to join. I received some documentation a couple of days ago requesting a wage garnishment from my company on myself. I don't know who the parties are. They got names on them, but I don't know who they are. How do I address
you no longer work
who
here.
They are?
You no longer work here. That's the answer. It's
yeah,
for
they,
you
they
and your own company.
To,
yeah, that's
yes,
pretty good.
Yes, they want me to garnishment of my own company, and I don't know who the parties are. I saw the names on it, but I don't know who they are. And the money they say I owe, I don't know who what that is. So how do I?
So you've had no litigation served on you. You have no idea who's doing this.
No. No, I got a letter from the mailman saying go to the post office, pick up this document, and then it was a wage garnishment. I said, wow. From people I don't know who
okay.
they are.
Well,
send them
you,
a letter.
What
with,
I suggest, no. go ahead, Larry, what?
Send them a letter with somebody else's name on it asking what they're trying to get or who they are.
All right.
Yeah, that just is weird, isn't it?
Yes.
I never heard of such a thing.
Well, but if you got one of these scumbags that got a judgment against somebody and it's the wrong person, you know, they might have had somebody else that had a situation, they did a search, got the wrong name. We see that kind of stuff all the time.
Wow.
Sewer service, they got a judgment, you were never served, you don't know anything about it, and all of a sudden they want you to pay the bill.
Yeah.
So you got to start doing some research. You know, I
got to join your group first. I need to do that. So that's my next. That's
yeah.
my first thing. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll join.
Okay, but just on the paperwork that you got, does it say anything about that there's a judgment from a court?
I looked at it just briefly. I saw some verbiage in there. I didn't really clearly. I was waiting for the call tonight to talk to you guys. And so
okay.
before I go to bed tonight, I'll look at it.
Yeah. You got to start right now instead of just looking at it briefly. You got to start reading every word and thinking about what's there and then start doing your
right.
research. If they mention a court, you know, a judgment from such and such a court and so on and so forth, then you want to go and start doing some research and seeing what you can find out about it. Okay?
All right. Yep, I can do that.
Okay, be
That's
proactive
yep.
in PDQ.
I will. Thank you
okay.
for taking my call. Thank
All right,
you
bet. Okay, we're going to go back down to Florida, 305 again. Hello,
hey
305.
Jonathan in Miami, how's everybody feeling?
Pretty good, how are you?
I'm doing fantabulous. Working on a foreclosure defense case. At the same time, I'm suing the bank attorney and servicer for FDCPA violations. But my question is on the case for the foreclosure defense. I filed a motion to dismiss for several reasons, one of them being that they did not file the cost bond. I guess they're supposed to file it within 30 days of filing their complaint.
Yeah, out of state. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So.
And what they're going to do is run and file it. That's all.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
So your motion is denied. That's it.
Okay.
Next question.
All right. Okay. Well, that was just one of my reasons on my motion to dismiss. So they could file it any time, even though it states it's supposed to be done within 30 days of filing their complaint.
Yeah, because the judge is going to say, oh, sorry, go ahead. Had a state defendant just, you know, he doesn't know nothing.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
I know, right? That. Wow, these idiots.
So,
let us do that, and boy, your butt, boy, you've lost. Get out of here, you know?
Gotta love it.
Don't depend on that doing anything for you, in other words.
Well, that was just one of my 10 reasons to dismiss the complaint, so. you know.
Okay. Yeah, well, that one, like I said, that one's fine, and you're right, and it's a good one, but at the end of the day, they can just go fix it, and then it's over. Now they're back to business. Don't you wish it was that easy for us? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely wish it was. As far as filing the answer, how does that typically work? They will pull this up, the motion to dismiss up for hearing, rule on it, deny it, or, you know, approve it. If it gets denied, then I file my answers. How does that work exactly?
Okay. Exactly. You just said it.
All right. So just wanted to make sure. I'm going to start putting my answer together now before they, you know, I don't want to be stuck too late not filing the answer. So I just have to wait for them to call up this motion, basically.
Yeah, you get a motion to dismiss, and you sit tight. There's no hurry for you to call it, is there? I don't think you're in a hurry, are you?
Yeah, no, I'm not in a hurry at all.
That's right.
They've already passed the statute of limitations on August 3rd.
Of what?
So, for being able to file this action.
It's over five years old?
Yeah, it's over 5 years now.
Since
the last action was filed. So I got the FDCPA case going. I'm trying to push that down their throats as fast as possible.
Right.
I'm trying to drag this one out as long as possible. So we'll see what happens. It's fun.
Good.
I'm enjoying myself. It's interesting. I'm learning, and I appreciate you guys, and I'll jump back in the queue.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good job.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right. We're going to go down, back down to the board jumped here. Don't do that to me. We're going to go back down to the Fort Worth area, 817.
Yes, sir. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. If you can speak up a little,
Dave.
It'd be great.
All right, Dave and the crew, appreciate you guys. Hey, listen, Dave, I had a question. I have a situation where I have a debt collector that's called me roughly five times, and they were calling looking for someone else. And so they did the spoofing thing. So they called me from a 214 number, but they were out of Pennsylvania. And so I'm looking to file actually tomorrow. I've already drawn it up, but where I was a little confused was the fact that they're not bonded in the state of Texas either. And so under our 392, I think it's 102, says that you can go after the surety. So I wasn't quite sure how that would work. Any input on that?
No, I don't think there's anything. I don't know if there's anything you can do under the bond stuff here.
Yeah.
I think that's
I don't either.
There's a private right of action on that.
Well, under the 392-102, it says that you can go after the bond for an aggregated amount of the surety, which is $10,000.
Well, but that's got to do with debt collection stuff. Where's the violation on debt collection? And you're talking about TCPA, right? Now, you sent me emails on this today, right, which I haven't gotten to, but I saw that I had some. It's the same. Okay. All right. I hadn't had a chance to answer them and delve into it. But I'm not aware of a private right of action there.
Okay. Yeah, because I didn't know because the fact that they were just simply attempting to collect the debt, and so they kept calling me, and I would tell them all the time, hey, man, listen, you got the wrong person. Yet they kept calling
me. But it is debt collection, Dave. I mean, if they're attempting to collect a debt, it's an alleged but non-existent debt because they could allege that he owed it, and they kept bugging him. So that is TCPA and FDCPA.
Well, yeah, he's going to have an FDCPA claim there. Absolutely, right.
If they did,
but
you asked them, so where's the violation?
Because they're not bonded, and that's there's a requirement that debt collectors be bonded in Texas. But I don't know
if there's anything
that you can do to go after them on that bond. You just
that
do your stuff under the FDCPA,
office.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I can keep.
And at the end of the day, here's what you want to do. What I would do is allege that they violated the FDCPA using unfair and unconscionable means to collect a debt because they know as debt collectors are supposed to be bonded, they can't even be operating in the state of Texas, yet they act like they are, right, above the law by yada, 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 whatever. So you could actually, you know, use that itself. I think that would be a violation of the FDCPA in itself.
Okay. Now, is it better for me to go state with our state code or under the FDCPA?
Both. Why wouldn't you use everything you got?
Now, I'll be honest with you. The Texas mirror statute for the FDCPA stinks, and I'm not dealing with it anymore because there's too much screwy case law to support it. Because there's requirements that they try and make you prove up, and for the piddly amount of money, it's not worth it in my book. That's just my personal opinion. In all my stuff, okay, I'm leaving it out. I'm doing strictly.
Really?
Federal.
Is that bad for you guys?
Yep.
What is it with these states?
Yep.
I don't get that.
Yep.
So you're saying it'd be better under FDCPA?
Yeah,
exactly.
Leave it federal.
I stay strictly with the federal statute because you can get $1,000. State, you can get $100. It's not worth all the fight and hassle.
Okay. And one last quick one, guys. I had a credit card situation where I was with Sears. I ran into an issue where they took away all of my available credit. They lied, sent me a notice, and said that I had bad credit. I had all of these things, and none of those things applied. And so I asked them to send me documentation, and, of course, I asked them to send me what I signed. And, of course, they didn't do that. And so next thing you know, I get a notice after I sent them a notice of dispute. I get a notice back from Citigroup saying we received your notice.
Right.
And so – but then Citigroup called me a total of 86 times.
So I think they owe you a lot of money.
Yeah.
Is this on your cell phone?
Yes, on my cell.
Okay. Had you given, when you signed up for the Sears credit card, did you give them that cell phone number?
I gave Sears the cell phone number, not Citi.
Well, when you apply for a Sears card, you're actually applying through Citi.
Well, I didn't know that.
It has a disclosure right there on it, so that's going to be hard to overcome.
Yeah.
But no, actually,
what I did was I did
everything at the register, so that was it. So when I called, the young lady told me, she said, oh, well, you signed off on the terms and conditions. And I said, well, show them to me with my signature that I signed off on it, because I signed a little box, and I did everything right there at the store. I didn't go through
but
the – normal application thing.
Yeah, but I think you'll probably find there's a small print there.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
said
Lynn.
That Sears canceled your card or what?
Well, what they did was they maxed me out. What they did, and they sent me they took away all of my available credits, and I had never been late on a card, no issues, no anything. They took everything away, and, of course, they maxed the card out. And so I was asking why they sent me a letter after the fact and said that I had too many derogatories, I had too many inquiries. And so I asked, I said, well, what is too many inquiries? You know, where's the state that I can't have,
okay,
you
but,
know, more
well,
than...
Okay, but hold on. Let's focus. Why did Citi call you 86 times? Was it because you were over your credit limit?
Well, no, because I was late. Not 30 days late, just late. So over the course of time, that's what it is. I stopped paying it. So when I sent my initial dispute, of course, they never answered. You know, that was it. And so that was their recourse. So Citi called me like 86 times.
Okay.
Who do you make the checks out to? That's the question I have.
I paid Sears. My statements came from Sears. My online account was Sears.
And who did you make checks to?
Sears.
Yeah, they can't both be original creditors. That's not possible. They can't both be original creditors, both Sears and Citibank.
That's my point. Yeah, that's why I just asked about that.
Sears doesn't handle their own accounts. All their accounts are
doesn't matter. They're claiming they're the original creditor because they're the ones who are demanding payment.
Because and then what they did at the end, they switched it. They got a third-party debt collector, so Sears – I mean, Citi was calling me, and I got dunning letters from another third party.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. They can reduce your credit. They can cancel your credit for no reason, bad reason, good reason. It doesn't matter. There's no issue there at all. But Citi calling you, I think they're a debt collector.
What do you mean? Larry, I agree with you 100%. Because you could prove that you applied at Sears and you made all your checks payable to Sears. And for the least sophisticated consumer, anybody in this courtroom at a jury trial, if it smells like a duck, walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, it's a duck.
Yeah, and the other thing is you're right. Just because they have some sort of agreement, they have to show that you actually had knowledge of it and signed it willingly.
Right.
And which, based on your initial ink, like, they can't do.
Okay. Okay. Good deal. That was my one of my biggest things, because I didn't, you know, I'm like, well, no, I can't have two creditors. And so when the individuals were calling me, that's what I would ask. And just like you guys said, that yeah, we collect on behalf of them. So I asked the question. I said, so you guys are classed as a debt collector then? And the lady says, well, yes, for Sears. Okay.
Perfect.
Yep. There you go.
You got notes
when
on that.
You
got the person's name. You got the date and time.
Well, I got recordings. I got everything.
Good.
Good.
Is it legal to record in your state?
Here in Texas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you got those kind of issues.
Answer?
Yeah. That should clear it up for everybody, David, because at the end of the day, if you go to Home Depot and you write a check to Home Depot for your credit card account and Home Depot accepts that payment, then they're acting as the creditor.
Right. Yeah. But when you have
clearly.
And now I have personal experience. I've had a card with Sears in the past. I've also had a card with Home Depot. Both of those, all their stuff was done by Citibank because Sears sold all her credit card business. So just got to be
well,
real
there you
careful
go.
what you're looking at.
And
you
Dave,
just said they sold the credit card business. If they sold it after the time that you got the card, then, well, I guess it depends on whether or not it was delinquent at the time.
Yeah. I know my mom and dad always go to Sears to pay because they're old school. And when they go to the Sears counter and pay, they don't write a check to Citibank. They write a check to Sears. Even to this day.
Right.
So that's pretty suspicious all around, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, those kind of arrangements out in the business world are very common. They really are with a lot of your retailers.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree with you. But the point is, just because they're common doesn't mean that they're not violating the federal statute
and
consumer
laws. Absolutely. Right.
You know.
You got to watch
the
details.
You guys this. Well, Dave, let me ask this then. When you're going and you're filling it out, I didn't fill out an application. They asked me questions. They said your income. They asked me, you know, if I own or rent on a little screen at the Walmart, and I answered those things, and that was it. So there was no disclosure to any contract, or if you will, for me to know how anything
well,
operates.
Well, that's going to be one of the things, whether there was any small print there that you didn't read. Possibly. I'm
no, it
just,
was all
you know,
electronic.
I'm just
it
exploring
nothing...
possibilities here.
Yeah,
always,
I get it.
You know, make sure you do your homework as much as you can on that, just to be sure.
Okay. All right, guys. I appreciate it.
All right.
Yeah. Man.
Yep. We got to move on here. We're going to see if we can get a couple, three more people in here real quick. We're running down to the end of things for tonight. Let's go to 978. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
First, I have a comment for the website. I'm a member since like February, and I was not very careful of listening and reading everything in the website. It's so great, and it's so much gold clues, and everything is there. And I kind of advise people that are not members to go into that. And that's where is everything. I think we have this, we intend to find things ready and come and ask the questions here, but it is ready there. In the last week, I work during the day, so I'm Eastern time till 5, I'm working, and I cannot listen to the 3 o'clock meetings. But
the webinars,
I went,
right.
Yeah, the webinars, and I was listening in the last week 3 times, the handling the servicer, and it's amazing. It's everything there.
Yeah, dealing
now,
with your servicer, yeah.
Dealing with your servicer. It's for people with mortgage, it's like fantastic. Now,
okay.
Here's the question, which is very
Thank
simple.
You.
Yeah, Dave, I have 3 phone calls from FIA. If I split them, each call one lawsuit, is it going to be more money or?
Yes, of course. Three filing fees, but you're going to get it all back anyway, so what's it matter? But I guess the first question I have is, why would you file three separate, just out of curiosity?
If I make more money, why not?
I'm
asking you, how are you going to make more money?
Yeah.
Is it TCPA and FDCPA in one phone call?
Yes. My point is, when you put in the FDCPA,
they're going to combine it.
For a second case, it's going to combine it because you have to finish one case before filing the next case if you're going to do it the way you're going to do it and it has FDCPA.
So I better file all of them in the same
time. Yeah, you file three cases. Yeah, three counts of TCPA, one count of FDCPA, and then whatever state laws that are, might be in your favor.
Yeah, now if I go with a small claims court, do I mention the FDCPA and the TCPA?
Yeah, you do both there, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.
You can do that. Okay.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Half Adam.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. Good night. Let's go to 919. You've been unmuted.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we got you. Go ahead, please.
All right.
Did
you
say, oh, damn it?
I was calling. I had a question. I'm in the middle of my TG, Texas Guarantee lawsuit. Discovery was supposed to be wrapped up on July 7th. I filed an extension, got the extension. I filed an interrogatory with the defendant on the 7th of August. Now, the extension for the discovery was until the 21st of August. So the only question I had really was, is there any wiggle room for them to not answer the interrogatories because the answer would, you know, the 30 days is outside the cutoff of the 21st?
Absolutely.
Discovery be over?
Absolutely. You have to propound that stuff so that they're required to answer within the window. You can't wait until the last day of discovery and send it to them, and then they answer it a month late. It doesn't work like that. So if you propounded your discovery to them just 2 weeks before discovery cutoff, it was
we've been doing discovery for a while. Part of the reason for filing the extension was because originally it was supposed to close on the 7th of July. Deposition for me, and they didn't have the court report, didn't have the transcripts ready. I wasn't able to conduct discovery because I didn't have all the information. So they gave me the extension, and during that extension, I was drawing up the interrogatories and making sure that I had everything in order. I wasn't able to get it out till the 7th, which gave them 2 weeks before the discovery's over to come up with an answer. I was just wondering if they didn't answer it.
No, that's what I'm trying to tell you. You had to have gotten it out at least 30 days beforehand so that the deadline fell inside the discovery window. As it is, they don't have to answer it. I hate to tell you that, but, that's, when you got discovery, if you get an extension, always keep in mind that the date that they are required, the outside date that they're required to respond by, still has to fall within the discovery deadline.
Okay. Would it be too much of a stretch to request another extension? Because I only requested an extension for like 45 days, thinking that would have been enough time, but I didn't get the transcript.
You could go ahead and move the court for an additional extension of the discovery deadline because of the fact that the court reporter did not have the transcript available for such and such a time, and it was an unforeseen delay, unforeseen and unavoidable delay. And for you not to receive a enlargement of time to have them reply would be prejudicial to you.
Well, I kind of that was the reason for the first extension. So, I mean, if I put that down again, I still didn't get enough time They're going to, I would look at it like they're going to say, why didn't you request that much time in the first place, the first time you got
You didn't know that the court reporter was going to screw around and not give you a transcript, did you? See, that's your extenuating circumstance.
I didn't know it would be under the 30-day period for when I filed the interrogatory.
No, I'm just telling you, the excuse / reason that you're going to give the court was something that you had no control over, correct?
Right.
Okay. The bottom line of the whole thing is you can request it. It doesn't mean you're going to get it, but I guarantee you, if you don't ask it, you are not going to get it.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Okay. I mean, it's up to you whether you want to do that. The most they can do is tell you, nope, you had enough time. In other words, you got everything to gain and nothing to lose.
The main thing I was concerned with was the interrogatory being answered because there's pertinent questions in there that require an answer.
That's immaterial in the process of things. We just went over the process. You have to, the way it sits right now, they don't have to answer them. The only alternative you have is to move the court to give you an additional, an extension of additional, 21 days to allow them to answer. And the reason is because you were not able to get the transcript, and for them not to have to answer would be prejudicial to you. I mean, that's the whole thing in a nutshell right there.
Okay.
So it's up to you whether you want to file a motion or not. Like I say, you got everything to gain, nothing to lose.
Exactly.
Because where you're sitting now, they don't have to answer, period.
Okay?
All right, we got to wrap things up.
Appreciate it.
How many calls we got left, Dave?
We got a bunch. Oh, probably about 15.
Oh, Lord, no, we can't go that long.
We're getting a lot of people that are calling in on these calls. We really do. So,
wow.
Anyway, everybody, thank you for joining us tonight. It's been a very interesting evening again. We covered a lot of good ground tonight, I think. Tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock, I'm going to be doing a webinar, part 6 of Conducting Yourself in Court. And what I'm going to be covering tomorrow is direct examination. Please join us for that. And tomorrow night, of course, we have Terry's call at 8 o'clock Eastern. If you are not on Terry's email list, move PDQ and send an email to queensongbird@gmail.com. Just say, I'd like to be on the list, please. And she'll get you on there and get the reminder sent out. Then, of course, we go through the weekend. And between this time and next Monday on my call, there's the forum that everybody should be using if you've got questions to get answers quicker. Of course, you have to be a member. If you're not a member, my question is, why not? Go in, use the forum. Please make sure that the questions you ask are in the right section of the forum. We've seen where we've had some people asking questions that relate to one thing in a different section of the forum. Make sure you're in the proper section when you do that. It helps keep things organized there. But then, like I said, next Monday we've got Dallas Death Discussion. That's at 9 o'clock Eastern on TalkShoe.com. The PIN for that is 54318, and we are in our sixth year for that. We're always there on Monday nights. I've never missed a Monday night in over 5 years. So these are all support calls. These are not a substitute for being a member of the site. Just like the gentleman said a few minutes ago, if you're not in the website, you don't have access to all the organized information, the legal lounge, and everything else. These are just meant to help you tie those pieces together for your specific circumstances. So it's not a replacement. But thanks again for joining us. Jesse, you got a last word?
No, just God bless everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you tomorrow, guys. That's it. It's been a long night. Good, a lot of good stuff. So have a great, great
all
week,
right,
guys. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night.